Hey everybody, welcome back to the CBC Q&A podcast. I'm your host, Will Lau. I got Josh Mack here and Isaiah Mackler joining me for the podcast and Q&A, where we just go over common questions from the sermon, questions from the church, or questions that people have, and do our best in having an answer or a conversation over it.
Awesome.
But before we go into that, I thought it'd be really cool just to hear any memorable Christmas gifts or events, things like that, that stood out to you guys from your childhood, from your life, whatever it is. Was there certain things that stood out Christmas-wise? Yeah.
Well, one of the funny things about that question, as I was thinking about it this morning, is just how hard it is to remember Christmas presents that you've been given. So, I mean, I'm 48 years old now, so thousands of dollars have been spent on me over the years, and I can hardly remember any of those gifts. And I think that's the way we tend to be, even just as humans.
So is that a little plug where I can share that to Theo and Leanne, say that?
Yeah, I mean, you won't remember.
So I don't need to get you any Christmas gifts this year, you know, because you won't.
But I do remember the fact of people getting them.
Oh, got it.
I don't necessarily remember the present, but I remember the gift. Marta gave me a really sweet present. I'm kind of a little corny, I guess. I like the I like presents that have thought and care and sort of like emotions attached to them. And so a couple years ago, she got me, this will sound weird and silly, but she got me some Legos, and it was Buckingham Palace. And that was where we had our first date, was at Buckingham Palace. And then she wrote a whole sweet little note about me being her prince and all those things. So
very creative.
That is one I can remember.
For sure.
That's very sweet.
For sure.
And you, Will, do you have a favorite?
One thing that's like a story that stands out to me was that like growing up, we didn't have much. And so shoes-wise, Payless, even the nicest pair of shoes, I remember the first time wearing them out, I stepped on dog poop and then just like stained it forever, right? The smell, even though after cleaning it. So in, I think, sixth grade, my dad got my brother and I, who's 2 years younger, both Vans, and all our friends had Vans and stuff like that. I was like, this is so cool, right? Like, and so that I remember that moment when we finally got like nice pairs of shoes so we can show off to our friends and stuff like that.
That's fun.
Yeah. How about you, Isaiah?
So I think that you're right, but like the same thing. You've received many gifts, but you don't really remember many of them. I think that it was a couple years where Melissa surprised me by the girls putting their handprints on coffee mugs and then baking them. And so we don't use them anymore because like one was cracked, but like those are still very sweet. And so those stand out.
One thing that helps is to get the same kind of gift every year. So every year we get pajamas. I can remember that. Yeah. Every year we get special mugs. I can remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those traditions are sweet.
That's cool. Why don't we jump into this past Sunday and the message titled Jesus and Unbelief from Luke 7:24-39. Were there certain takeaways, whether it be in the study or certain takeaways or things that we've learned from just sitting under the word and hearing it? I think for me, just to kick it off, was I thought it was very interesting in the comparison between John the Baptist and his doubt versus the Pharisee and their unbelief. And you sort of thinking like, oh, there's like similarities there. But in reality, when you study it further, it's a stark contrast between the two. And so, I mean, that was definitely a thing that stood out to me, at least one of the points that stood out to me listening to it.
That's great, because that's one of the things I definitely wanted to get across. And hopefully at Cornerstone, even as parents and as a church, we won't be a place where people are afraid to be honest as they look at the world and ask questions and reflect on and even express, you know, I'm struggling with very real doubt here. I was reading a psalm this morning, actually, where the psalmist was saying, God, I look back on what you've done in the past, and it was huge. I have hope, I believe that you're going to do work in the future. But right now, we're doing the right thing, and it seems like you've forgotten us. And then that's how the psalm ended. And I was like, wow, you know, what a, What an ending. But doubt, you know, to a certain extent, is part of the human condition, and we want to fight against it and pray for help in the war that's going on in our minds. But at the same time, we need to be honest and take those doubts to Jesus, and we want to even encourage our kids. They need to be careful that they don't think they're God as they doubt. They don't think they're smarter than God as they doubt. But that we recognize that, yeah, there are some things that are hard to understand, and we need to take that to Jesus.
Yeah, and I think it was pretty clear too how the difference between doubt and unbelief is not neutral, right? Oftentimes I think like unbelief, oh, I didn't get all the facts and so that's why I don't believe. Mm-hmm. When in reality, when we're seeing in Luke 7, they had all the facts. They've had the history. They've seen this play out before, and yet they still didn't believe, or they basically rejected the message, or rejected the faith in that sense. And so, yeah, unbelief is not neutral was definitely a big point too that I took away.
Yeah. So one thing that does is it definitely highlights the miracle of regeneration. So if you are a Christian, understand that is a miraculous work of grace in your life. It wasn't because you just sort of figured it out on your own, because your heart was not neutral. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. Israel had so many privileges. Reading Exodus, thinking about Mount Sinai, God showing up in the way that he showed up. And yet, what do they do when Moses goes up on the mountain? They make themselves an idol and then have excuses for it. And they're not, I think the thing that will help as we read the Bible is just understanding they are not worse than us. The Pharisees even are not worse than us. If anything, they're the best of us. Mm. And yet this is what we see the human heart is like.
How about you guys? Is there anything that you took away?
Well, it was encouraging that that when you see what the problem of unbelief is and how it is a heart problem and unwillingness to receive truth, it does take some of the burden away from us when it comes to kind of sharing truth. And so that's pretty wild to see the difference between John the Baptist and Jesus, very different kinds of ministries, and yet they were both rejected. So that's it was neat to see that the real problem wasn't with the messenger, which of course we know, but with the message, and that's a heart problem that only God can overcome, and so that none of us are going to respond to that message with real faith without God's grace.
Right. Again, should make us more prayerful, more dependent. Even as I think about early days of ministry, you can know this and not know it. So sometimes you can think, you wouldn't say it, but deep down, almost think, if I can just be persuasive enough or sweet enough or somehow clever enough, then I can communicate in a way that everybody is going to bow the knee. And so when they don't, sometimes you automatically think, the problem must be me. And yeah, I mean, there's validity to asking yourself that, because I bring a lot of problems to the table. But at the same time, just because somebody rejects you, it really is important to understand that doesn't necessarily mean the problem was with you or with the message. It actually is normal. It's pretty normal for us to be rejected. And we have to take that into consideration as a church. If we're saying the reason we're not taking the gospel out is because we're not good enough or we're being rejected, if that's slowing us down, then what did we expect? Jesus was crucified. And so the goal is for us to glorify God. Our job is to proclaim this message. That's our job, to proclaim the message. God's in charge of conversion. And so we glorify God by proclaiming the message, and a lot of times being rejected as we proclaim it. And then sometimes we see just God in stunning ways save people. But
And that kind of gets to what you were saying. The fact that we're surprised that we're rejected shows the confusion we have about our own hearts. Because the only reason why we received it is because God did a miracle in us in bringing us to new life. So why would we be surprised that mm-hmm. people rejected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then even as you parent your kids, one of the things I was talking to my kids this week about is that for them to be saved is a miracle. Mm. For them to be saved is a miracle. It's not, this is their natural state apart from a supernatural work of God, is that they are going to want to be their own God and not bow the knee to Jesus Christ. And so I pray that for them, and I encourage them. If you're not saved, you'd be crying out to God to do this miracle in your life and in your heart.
Hmm. I was just thinking, in light of unbelief, in reality, like you're saying, we're very more like the Pharisees than we might think, because I often put them as the bad guys, and we're not bad guys. We're good guys. We're protagonists of the story. And unbelief is basically an aspect of rejection or wanting to be God and not obeying, wanting to reinterpret the command, and because of whether it be my comfort, because I don't like it, what variety of reasons why you reject, basically, right? I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, what are there certain signs? Because, like, hey, we do believe, and help my unbelief, there's an aspect of that. But then at the same time, there's certain things that we're doing that's just basically showing true unbelief, true rejection of who we say we are as Christians. And so I was thinking about that, because there's doubt. When we come to doubt, we come to Jesus asking for him to, like, change, asking for help, because we're dependent, like John the Baptist was showing, despite whatever the results may be. But then in unbelief and rejection, it's just like, I guess we're staying the same path,
mm-hmm.
even though we might be skirmishing here and there or praying, but I guess we're really not changing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the distinction of how it plays out, I guess, in fruit or in action?
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys thought about that?
Well, one of the things that Pastor Joshua said a couple weeks ago, and it was kind of cool because Nora remembered it. We were talking about faith and, like, what is faith? And she says it's going to Jesus.
Mm.
And like, that really was what John the Baptist does. So I think that that's a great question. Is this unbelief or is this doubt?
Mm.
And I think a great test is if you're going to Jesus and saying, Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief. I believe, but I want to believe more. I believe I want to be transformed more. I want to be more pleasing to you. If that's driving us to Christ and throwing ourselves upon him and enjoying him ultimately and wanting to believe more his love for us, then that's real faith, I think, you know. I know that that's what faith is. But then if we are okay with the level of, like, yeah, I don't know. It's not that it's not okay with the level of faith, but if it's just a formal thing that's not bringing us to Christ. Yeah, so maybe the difference, I'm starting to ramble now, is it bringing us to Christ?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Personally, I had those couple years in university where I was struggling with doubt, and I think if you pulled out the thoughts by themselves and put them on the table, it would be hard to tell. Is that unbelief or is that doubt? Because some of those thoughts were awful. You know, is there a God? Why would God send people to hell? Just terrible thoughts. And sometimes they felt like they weren't, I didn't even know where they were coming from. You know, they were just coming at such a fast pace, sitting in church services, you know, going to bed at night, just not even sure where they were coming from. But in the middle of all that, I would say, and I hated those thoughts, in the middle of all that, I was still seeking to do what I knew to be true. In the middle of that, I was asking God for help, and I was opening up with other believers and having them pray for me. So I think unbelief responds a little differently in that it doesn't keep obeying. It tends to think it's smarter than God is. I had to, there were times where I didn't know how do I stop these thoughts. I didn't know how to stop the thoughts because they were just coming at such a pace. And there was a time where I had to say, God, I hate these thoughts. I literally do not know how to stop them, but I'm not going to dwell on them. I'm not going to act as if they're true. I don't believe them. So even when they would come in my mind, I'd be like, I do not believe this thought. This is what's true. This is what's real. And this is how I'm going to live. And that was a daily battle for many years, for a few years there in university. And now it's still even that happens, you know, doubts come into your mind. Where did that come from? What does the Bible say? I'm gonna act in obedience to what the Bible says, whether or not I feel like it's real or true. I know it is. So we're living. It's like we're living in an insane asylum, you know, and we're sane, and yet we're living in this insane asylum and got so much nonsense all around us, swirling around at all times. So we just. And some of that stuff gets in our heads, so we can't feed it, and we have to respond to it with truth and obedience.
So unbelief then is like maybe that doubt becomes sin when you give into it, and I'm just kind of picturing it as you speak of as like intentionally closing the door, right? Mm. I mean, it's not keeping communication open with God, expressing doubts to Him, but it is giving into the temptation of I'm sealing a door kind of onto my relationship with God because He's not answering questions the way that I want them to be answered.
Yeah.
So it's getting freedom. I mean, ultimately is what unbelief is, by boxing God out.
Right. It's a struggle sometimes to be precise, you know, in terms of is this a temptation or is it a sin when it's in my own head, you know? Mm-hmm. Some of those thoughts sure didn't feel like I was generating them.
Right.
But it could be, you know, the reality is years of reading the wrong books or, you know, too much triviality or talking to the wrong people. That could be part of where, so it could be some of those were fed or it could be part of being human and having an imperfect knowledge and imperfect ability to reason. So at a certain point the way I dealt with it at that point at least was, Lord, I hate these thoughts. These are not true. So in that sense they are, I reject them. If they're coming from me, please forgive me. And if it's just something that comes with being a broken human in this world right now, I'm not going to listen to lies.
What was in as you struggled with those doubts, was it always a matter of a temptation that you were running from, or was there a point where there was a worldview that was alluring to you and that it kind of became like, no, I'm choosing to reject that? You know, because a lot of times, well, I think that our flesh wants independence from God, right? Our flesh is always going to want independence from God.
Yeah.
I think that doubts can be a way that we can try to create space where there's independence from God. So in your battle, was it always like no, I'm just running hard away? Or did you ever see what was going on inside your heart? Like no.
In my case, I think it was a little different just because I think it was a little different in that I hated mm-hmm. them from the beginning. But I part of what was going on, I think, was just being a young man and realizing if Christianity was true, then it had to be completely true. Mm. And if it wasn't true, then I needed to be brave enough to not just be a Christian on the outside.
Yeah.
So I think that was it was what was going on, was like, I don't want to go through my life and be an old man who was just going to church and not and living half-hearted and not really banking on this, because it's either completely true and changes everything or it's totally false and, you know, tomorrow you die. So that was, I think, a part of why God allowed that in my life at that moment.
That's helpful to talk about. I think the last question we could potentially talk through was going through an article from Desiring God, and it was titled "What Grieving People Wish You Would Know, Wish You Knew at Christmas," and really just the idea that although it can be a time of great joy, celebration, happiness, there are people out there, many, that are dealing with loss of a loved one, family tensions, awkwardness, no family around, this, that, and the other, and just difficulties.
Sad past.
Yeah, exactly. Difficulties and knowing how to deal with that, knowing how to minister, how to be a good friend and brother or a believer in Christ in light of someone going through that. I guess, did you guys have any thoughts? I don't know, Isaiah, did you have any thoughts in light of that?
Well, as you described that, I mean, one of the challenges is when you are expected not just to worship Christ, which has its own challenges, as we're even talking about, even though he's wonderful and deserves to be worshipped, it is interesting when you're like go into a month long of you should feel a certain way. You know, so these are the feelings you should feel. You should feel a lot of warmth. You should have a lot of happy memories. You should, and so that's where it gets difficult. So all these feelings that you should have as compared then, but then they get intermixed with biblical commands, which are of course true, of like being thankful and remembering God's grace. So that's a weird kind of interspersing. So maybe to parse out what is the response that I should have because of what is true, because Christ has come into this world. I mean, I've been enjoying a couple Advent books. I'm sure I've probably done in the past, but it's been a long time. If I have, there's a PDF you can get by John Piper called "The Dawn of Indestructible Joy." It's free. You can search for it. And it's been really refreshing. It kind of made me think, hey, I wish we had one of these focuses every month, because really it's just the gospel. And so that's where I feel bad for someone who thinks they have to stir up certain feelings when they see a red Starbucks cup of how wonderful their past is and how great puppies are or whatever, when really God's been so gracious. So I don't know, it's just some riffing.
It's good. I'll often think, at least in my own life, that I need to be careful when I am looking at my life and beginning to feel maybe a little bit of self-pity or discontent, that I'm speaking the whole truth. And so part of the truth for many people when they're grieving is that they have real reasons to grieve. Like, you put that out there, that is sad. That's just sad. It's part of being in a broken world. But sometimes what can happen is that you focus so much on that one part of the painting that you missed all these other beautiful parts as well. Yeah. And so it's good to be honest about, like, this is hard for me. You don't have to go around trying to pretend like it's different. But at the same time, as you talk about that with yourself, just tell yourself the whole story. There's a sovereign God who's working for good, who loves you, who sent his own son into the world to become man and experience all this suffering that you've experienced, that you might have peace with him. And that's not less true than how you're feeling right now. That's actually more fundamentally big, huge, than how you're feeling right now. And so it might not feel like that to you, but that just means you're not in touch with reality, and you got to do the work to get yourself in touch with reality.
Yeah, if there is sadness because of missed loved ones, can you turn it, that sadness is real, but can you turn it into thankfulness for the time that you had with them? To do that with all of those feelings, it's not that you don't feel them.
Right.
So imagine a young teenager who is living here in Southern California, you know, has people around them that love them, this whole big story, all this great stuff. But they're sitting in a room with others who have a cell phone and they don't have one. And they're saying, you're just feeling such pity for themselves and saying, my life is horrible. I'm so discontent with my life. Well, what have they just done? They've reduced their whole life down to them not having a cell phone. So their whole life, they're saying, I'm discontent with my life. And what do they really mean? Is there anything else you're discontent with? No, I don't have a cell phone. So their whole life has become not having a cell phone. And that's easy to see in teenagers. You're like, okay, that's a little cute and silly. Hmm. But we do that. We got this whole life story, but we reduce it down to this one thing. So you say, what are you discontent about? Well, it's hard. You know, maybe I'm single. That's true. That's really true. That's really hard. We don't want to minimize that. But there's other things. You have an eternity to be with God, you know. And we're not asking that you don't feel the pain of some of these things. But just as you do, pray that God helps you not shrink your life down mm-hmm. to just this one thing that you're missing.
Yeah. I think that's big. In light of our feelings, right, you're talking about like the America does marketing very well in regards to how you're supposed to feel. You should be buying all these gifts. Everyone should be opening it. It's a joyous occasion, blah, 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 blah. And yet at the same time, sort of bringing back to like John the Baptist, like, in the sense of like
awesome,
his feelings, like, hey, tell Jesus, ask Jesus these questions, come back. Hey, when's Jesus going to get me out? If he's for real, if he's the one who's going to save us, he's going to redeem us, I'm the forerunner. Yeah. I'm for him. Mm. You would think you'd get the key and bail me out, whatever it may be. But I'm still in jail. How should I be feeling mm-hmm. right now? And being reminded of the whole truth, I think that's huge. And that's a good correction. That's good potential rebuke for somebody. Like, if someone was to tell me, like, oh, I'm going through all this, I could just sit there and just listen and just like, oh, I feel bad for you, brother or sister, mm-hmm. and not say anything. And that might be appropriate. I'm not saying that is or isn't appropriate, but I'm saying that could be opportunities as well where you can provide a reminder mm-hmm. of the bigger story that we all believe. Mm-hmm. That we believe. We say we're Christians and we follow Jesus and we love Jesus, then this is the truth as well. And how's that going to impact your life in light of the situation you're dealing with right now?
Right. It's hard sometimes when you're dealing with others, but certainly when they're dealing with me, I want them to be kind and gracious and recognize that I'm suffering. But at the same time, I want them to tell me the truth. It's hard to understand exactly why that would bother me.
There's with this Advent idea, it's not just supposed to be like counting the days until Christ was supposed to be born, but that, you know, and churches that have liturgies and or different other kinds of liturgies, like the idea is you're looking towards Christ's second coming. Mm. And so that is, in a sense, the perfect response. We're not just looking back. We're really not looking to a manger. We're not even looking back to a cross. All those things are amazing and wonderful, but we are waiting for Christ to come back. So in a sense, being broken during this season is perfect because the world is broken and Christ is going to come and fix it.
Mm. And we can even lean into some of those feelings a little bit because you're right, and you don't even realize, you maybe don't even appreciate how broken the world is right now.
Right.
So lament. Not just over your suffering, but also
right.
over all this stuff that we don't normally feel because we're so self-centered.
I'm sure some of us had some very
and long for the return of Christ.
Some very sad Christmases growing up. But how many millions are going to have a sadder Christmas?
Yeah, right.
This year,
and we should grieve over that.
Yeah,
it's sad.
Yeah, and Jesus is coming back.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Both are true.
Right. I think that's that reminder of like Luke 5. I was listening to the sermons again, or just our dialogue over it, and just being reminded that, yeah, this is not heaven, right?
Right.
We're still waiting for Jesus. And so there is that aspect of mourning. It is the aspect of like fasting and longing for him to come and saying Maranatha, despite, yeah, whatever the season, the time of the year it is. And
some of us are fixers, you know, when somebody's sad, we just got to find a way to fix it so quickly, you know, to get that feeling like as if they're not allowed to feel that. And we need to be careful, too. We're not the Savior. Mm-hmm. There is a Savior who is coming back. And we have maybe a role to play to come alongside of them and bear their burden with them and help them think truly. But we don't want to take on the role of Jesus in their life and or think that salvation is them feeling like everything was perfect in this world, because it's actually not right now. Right. We need to have a little bit of discontentment as we long for the return of Christ.
Mm. Yeah, Jesus didn't come to give us all Hallmark Christmases.
Yeah.
And it's neat if you do get to experience one of those. But the reality is that you're still going to be sinful, and someone's going to be discontent about a present. And
Yeah, perfect. That's good. I think to wrap it up, put it on a bow, I think
Josh, you had something to share. Yeah. So it's been about 10 years now that Marta's been able to sleep through the night because of, for about 17 years, she wasn't able to sleep through the night because of all the children. And so now we have our first foster care baby today.
Yay. Yeah,
pretty soon. Five months old. And Marta's picking up the baby this afternoon, so we're excited this adventure. Let's see how the Lord sustains us through it, but give it a shot.
So cool. Praise God. Oh, wow.
That baby will probably have a better first Christmas.
Lord willing, yeah.
Something looking forward to in regards to like this fostering process?
Oh, it's just so fun to see the family, how excited they are, and even Marta, she gets so excited to serve, and the kids too. And then I'm looking forward to see the way the Lord, because it's right on the edge of too much, you know. So I'm looking forward to see the way the Lord sustains us, and seeing if we can do it, you know, long term, if we're able to. And then also excited to get to know potentially the people surrounding the baby. Because we just feel like that's a great opportunity for us to show the love of Christ.
Not to dig in too deep, but like, what made you guys want to lean in more? Because like you were saying, you're on the cusp of, is this too much? Or by doing this, this could be too much for our family in that sense.
Yeah.
Like, what made you want to lean in on saying?
Yeah, well, in the past, we always find more joy in pushing towards sacrificial service. And so we've just seen that time and time and time again. So sort of loving that joy and knowing that joy from the past has sort of made me excited. Let's give it a shot and see if we have the capability of doing this, because it just was such a joy in the past, and seeing God open up surprising different opportunities. Another is, I'm not the most just like meet somebody on the street, hey, let's talk for 2 hours. You know, I'm more like, once I'm in, I'm able to have a really good conversation, but that initial start is not always my greatest strength. And so this seems like a way the Lord's enabled us in the past to develop more relationships with unbelievers, where we could have significant conversations. It's kind of easy, hard way to do that.
Cool. Thank you for sharing that. That's exciting. Yeah. I'll definitely be praying for you guys.
Please.
Yeah. What are you leading up to? It's like sleepless nights. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, no miracles happening.
maybe we'll have.
Not quite Abraham yet, but we're.
Anyway, with that said, again, a reminder, plug. If you guys have any questions, feel free to let us know. We'd be more than happy to think about it. Hopefully, be able to provide the answer, talk through it. And we're just here for you, and just being able to dialogue over the questions from the passages or just things that are going through your mind. And as Josh says, or Isaiah says, like, if you have a question, most likely another brother or sister or somebody else has it too. So something to think about. So.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Grace and peace.
We're out.